This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we want to hear from you about a TV show you watched or watched as a kid that was from before your time. Let us know right now on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Now, it's Food Friday. Our guest is an internationally recognized chef focused on indigenous cuisine. He's on a mission to cook with indigenous ingredients, meaning those here in North America pre-colonization. He's hoping to revive cultural traditions around food, and he says it's a healthy way to eat. Also, tasty. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about indigenous food ingredients and recipes and cultural traditions and how they fit into American cuisine now? Are there Native American dishes you've enjoyed maybe as a diner, maybe part of your own family's food tradition? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Sean Sherman, also known as the Sioux Chef, is Oglala Lakota. He's a chef serving indigenous foods at his restaurant, Owamni, based in Minneapolis. It won a James Beard Award. He specializes in wild food usage and harvesting, food preservation, salt and sugar making, while recognizing Native culture and history. Sean's the author of the book, The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen. Sean, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into your mission and the why, last time we talked to you was 2014. You were just embarking on being involved in a food truck. You've done a lot since then. Can you talk about how this your mission and your work has progressed over the last 8 years or so?
Yeah, we've done a lot. You know, we launched that food truck. It was called Tatanka Truck here in Minneapolis. We started a catering company that ran all the way up until the pandemic. We released the cookbook, which was the Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen, which won a James Beard Award for Best American Cookbook in 2018. We launched a nonprofit called NATIFS, which is an acronym for North American Traditional Indigenous Food Systems, which also landed another James Beard Award in 2019 for leadership. And then we finally opened up Owamni in 2021 in July, and we've been sold out pretty much every day since opening, and we won the James Beard Award for Best New Restaurant in the entire nation, which is a pretty big one.
Well, congratulations on all that since the last time I talked to you. Give us a sense of where your mission started. You were working, you were on the restaurant scene. What steered you in this direction of indigenous ingredients and foods?
Well, you know, I grew up on Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, so I'm enrolled with the Oglala Lakota Sioux Tribe, and I moved to Minneapolis shortly after college from South Dakota and started working restaurants and just kind of moved my way up rather quickly into a chef career at a pretty young age. And a few years into that career, I just kind of realized the complete absence of indigenous culinary anywhere out there. There was very few cookbooks, there was no restaurants, and it just was something that had to change. So I spent quite a few years just researching to understand what my ancestors were eating, how were they preserved foods, you know, what were they cooking, what were they using for salts and fats and sugars, and then started searching, like, who was still holding on to indigenous seeds, who had a really good knowledge of the plants out there, and just started piecing together kind of a philosophy of the work that we do today.
And you cover a wide variety of traditions. When we think of Native American food, I think we have to throw the S out. We're talking about foods and cultures and traditions. Can you talk about just the diversity, the variety of food traditions around the continent?
So much. I mean, North America is gigantic, and we look at North America from Mexico through Alaska, and there's just so much to understand. There's so much diversity. You know, there's 476 tribes in the U.S., 622 in Canada, and there's, you know, there's 20% of Mexico identifies as indigenous, and we're just trying to showcase all this amazing regional and cultural diversity that's out there. And there's a lot of work to do, but, you know, we're starting, and we've been working really hard for quite the past few years, and there's a large, you know, indigenous food sovereignty movement happening all over the U.S., including around here in Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Can you talk about some of the ingredients that that weren't showing up in the restaurants you were working in that you've turned to and found sources for, maybe cultivated those sources for? What kind of foods, what kind of ingredients are we talking about?
Well, you know, we cut out ingredients that were introduced by Europeans primarily, so things that weren't from here. So we removed dairy products, wheat flour, cane sugar, beef, pork, chicken. So we focus on a lot of wild game, a lot of wild birds, a lot of wild fish, and we just use a lot of wild food products in general. So we've been able to find all sorts of wonderful vendors. We try and purchase from indigenous producers first. You know, if you come to the restaurant, you're just going to find a lot more plant diversity. You know, there's a lot of interesting plants that grow here here in the forests around Wisconsin, Minnesota, things like Labrador, wintergreen, wild gingers, bergamots, lots of white cedar and spruce and pines and tamarack and burdock and all sorts of amazing foods, you know. So it's just showcasing, like, we have this wonderful food system around us, and we should really be opening our eyes and seeing so much flavor and just region everywhere.
Talking to Sean Sherman, creator of the restaurant Awamni in Minneapolis, author of the book The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen, talking about his mission to bring back food traditions from around the country, Native Americans, around history and the present day. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a question, that's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. You can find a recipe that Sean shared with us. It's at wpr.org/foodfriday. And Sean, I want to check out that recipe now. You sent us a wild rice pilaf with mushrooms, roasted chestnuts, and dried cranberries. Can you tell us a little bit about this? It sounds like a great thing to eat this time of year.
Yeah, it's just a really simple recipe. And, you know, we urge people to look around and try to find tribally produced and harvested wild rice, which grows on the lakes here. And it's not like the black wild rice you find in the grocery stores at all. So we're lucky that we have a lot of wild rice sources around us. And we just want people to be able to taste that and experience that. And this is just a really simple recipe, and something that you can find a similar recipe on at the restaurant at Awamni in downtown Minneapolis.
And talk a little more about wild rice. I think if you quizzed people on the street, probably including me, and said, hey, name one Native American food ingredient, wild rice might be the first one to pop to mind. Can you talk about the wild rice scene today? Who's harvesting it? What is the network like in getting it for a restaurant or at home?
Well, we were using a group, the young couple that's here from Minnesota, close to Duluth. And we've been purchasing a lot of wild rice from them, but we purchase wild rice from many of the tribes around Minnesota, from Net Lake, from White Earth, from Red Lake. And but, you know, we have this really wonderful rice coming from this small couple. They have a company called Native Wise, and it's just really beautiful. And, you know, we have all these different kinds of rice coming from all these different kinds of lakes in Minnesota. And when you lay them side by side, you can see all these nuances in color and length and size. And it's just something really special, you know, so we should be really proud of this rice that comes from these lakes. And we have friends out in Bad River that's growing out more rice. We have some friends in Menominee Nation out in Wisconsin also that's working on rice. And there's there's a lot of stuff happening, but there's still rice out there. There's people still trying to protect those waters and harvest that really wonderful just food source. And we're happy to be able to showcase it.
And, you know, something that occurs to me as you're talking about that, you know, setting the food aside for a moment, it sounds like you're, I don't know, building this network and meeting so many people and extending this community of people interested in indigenous food. What has that been like for you?
You know, it's great. You know, it's a passion. You know, it's something that just has to be out there. You know, we hope that someday we can see Native American indigenous restaurants all across North America, no matter which direction you drive, and start to experience all this amazing cultural diversity that we have everywhere. And for a lot of tribal communities, it's just really important to try to get these foods back into these communities, because food access is a real issue. I use my reservation as an example, because growing up on Pine Ridge, we had one grocery store to service an area the size of Connecticut. And there's just very little food sources out there for us when it comes to nutrition, you know. But if we can teach people how to, like, look at the world around us like our ancestors used to, see food all around us, and start to implement a lot more wild food, native agriculture, and to see more and more food products coming from native producers, like, we feel like there's so much work to do, but we see a really clear path. So we're excited to be working hard on this issue.
Can you talk about recipe creation at your restaurant when you're starting to develop something new that you want to serve? What goes into that planning and development stage for you?
Well, we really just try to make recipes make sense, like, especially regionally and seasonally and culturally. So we just like to use the native languages. We like to just think about food that, you know, where you can find it, you know. So if we have something that has wild rice in it, and maybe it has some hickory nuts, maybe it has some maple or some cranberries, and maybe some rabbit, like, you can literally just stand in one spot around these forests and look around and see all those ingredients there, you know. So the food is completely different if you're in the Pacific Northwest or up in Alaska or Southwest or deep in Mexico or East Coast. And we just want people to really think about that regionality of foods and really tie that understanding that indigenous peoples have always had about those regions and all these wonderful foods that come from these very specific places.
I haven't been to your restaurant, I'll say, yet. I've got a kid going to college in Minneapolis, so I may pay a visit sometime fairly soon. But are your recipes focusing on, you know, Midwestern traditions in particular, or would there be something from an Alaskan tradition or Southwestern or fill in the blank?
Yeah, I mean, the large amount of our food is really from the Great Lakes regions up here, but we do feature some flavors from the Southwest or from deep in Mexico or from way up in Alaska sometimes. So we have that ability to be creative and to highlight and showcase all these things. And, you know, we have a large staff. We have a lot of Native people working with us, and a lot of us are coming from many, many different nations. And we just like to, you know, give our chefs some freedom to create and to explore. And we're not trying to recreate the past and make food, you know, like it's 1491, but we're trying to do something different and, you know, kind of evolve this food into the new generation and just kind of showcase what's possible for modern indigenous foods moving forward.
We're talking to Sean Sherman, a chef specializing in indigenous cooking. He works to bring in Native culture, history, and ingredients to today's food scene. His restaurant, as we mentioned, is Awamni in Minneapolis. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a question for Sean, maybe about some of the ingredients he works with, if you forage for some of the things he just mentioned, love to hear from you, where you find it, what kind of things you do with it. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We have a link to that recipe we were talking about, the wild rice pilaf with mushrooms, roasted chestnuts, and dried cranberries. You can find that at wpr.org/Food Friday. We'll continue our Food Friday conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our talk with Sean Sherman, chef and owner of the restaurant Awamni, based in Minneapolis. Sean's with us today to talk about his work in educating people on indigenous foods. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 if you'd like. If you've encountered some of the ingredients we're talking about, if you have a question for Sean, 800-642-1234. Sean, one thing we haven't gotten into yet, I understand is important to you, is the health side of the foods you're working with.
Absolutely. You know, because since we cut out these colonial ingredients of dairy and flour and sugar, for example, like our entire menu is gluten-free, sugar-free, soy-free, pork-free, dairy-free. And, you know, we just, you know, it's a really healthy food base, you know, and plus we're using a lot more plant diversity, which is really good for us. We're utilizing a lot of just this game meat that just has a lot more nutrients in it. And it's just a really healthy food base, you know, and we just really want to see that because unfortunately on a lot of tribal communities, because of that lack of food access, we have a lot of foodborne illnesses like obesity and heart disease and type 2 diabetes, and we want to be able to work towards changing that, you know. And you feel really good when you sit down at the restaurant and eat this food, and you might feel full, but you're really like agrees with you, like your stomach doesn't get all crazy, and it's like clean burning energy food, you know. And we just think we should be eating healthier anyway, so we're happy to be able to showcase that.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Pete is with us now in La Crosse. Pete, hi.
Hi. Hey, Sean. Hey, I'm wondering about how does fowl fit into the Midwestern Native American diet? Geese, ducks, maybe grouse. And if they do fit into the diet, how do you get them? How do you catch them?
You have to be really fast. No, I'm teasing. No, we actually have a grower here in Minnesota that grows a bunch of woodland poultry for me. So we get turkey, we get geese, we get ducks, we get quails, and we even get some pheasants from them, which I know aren't indigenous, but, you know, they're all over the place. I grew up hunting them on Pine Ridge. And so we have all these wild birds. They're not wild, but they're like, you know, they're like free range birds basically growing up in the forest in Minnesota. So, you know, we've been able to get a lot of cool vendors. We have other game vendors. We use things like antelope and deer and antelope and venison and rabbit and elk and bison, of course, and all sorts of wonderful lake fish since we're just surrounded by lakes, you know, walleyes and whitefish and northerns and trout, and, you know, there's so much stuff. And then also we're able to, you know, utilize some of the seafoods coming in from the coasts and really feature recipes there. So there's just a lot of cool proteins out there. We even do crickets. We have about, I think I'm going through about 15 pounds of crickets a week at the restaurant.
Just talked to a cricket farmer the other day. Pete, thanks a lot for that call. For the ducks and geese that Pete is interested in, what are some of your favorite ways to prepare them, Sean?
Well, it really depends. You know, we like stewing things. We like smoking things. Of course, we can cook things fresh, like some of the breasts sometimes. And there's just lots of ways. But, you know, we have many different recipes with all these different things. And we just have a lot of fun with it. Sometimes we'll dehydrate them. Sometimes we'll turn that dehydrated meat into powder. And we've just been creating hundreds of recipes over the past few years. So we'll continue to put out more cookbooks. There's another one in the works. It's a couple of years out, but it'll get out there. But people can still find the first cookbook. It's pretty popular and it's out there all over the internet. So just search for the Sous Chef's Indigenous Kitchen.
Thanks again for that call. We'll go to Kay now in Madison. Hi, Kay.
Hi. I'm wondering if you get any of your ingredients from Wisconsin.
Oh, good question, Sean.
Sometimes, you know, we have some friends with Ho-Chunk Nation. We've been able to get some from them. We've been able to get some stuff from Menominee Nation sometimes. We have quite a few friends out in Bad River. We get a bunch of fish from the Red Cliff Fishery, which is up north there by Madeline Island also. So we're always, you know, on the search for indigenous producers around us. So we do get some really wonderful products that come from Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Okay, great question. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Something you mentioned earlier, Sean, is preservation of foods. This is a cold stretch of winter here. This isn't the greatest foraging season. Can you talk about the different ways you preserve some of those ingredients?
Yeah, I mean, we dehydrate a lot. So we do a lot of dehydration and we make all sorts of different dehydrated spices and herbs and pieces from trees like cedar. We use a lot of meats and fish. We smoke a lot of things too first. And there's just a lot of ways. And we do some pickling, you know, and sometimes we'll play around with some fermentation. I think there's lots of options for just preserving foods in general. And, you know, we're just having a fun time experimenting. And we even have a nonprofit kitchen here in Minneapolis called Indigenous Food Lab, where we have the ability to do a lot of experimentation to kind of further our own knowledge and education. And we're about ready to launch a native market space there in South Minneapolis under Indigenous Food Lab. So this community will have direct access to buying a lot of these cool products that are out there. So we can just share that with people.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Sean Sherman. His restaurant, Awamni, is based in Minneapolis. He's the author of the book, The Sous Chef's Indigenous Kitchen. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Jim is with us now in Delafield. Jim, hi.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good. What did you want to ask about?
I'm curious about how they spice their food. I know that's more... Yeah, well, let's just leave it at that. How do you spice the food? One question. And the second question is, do you have any plans of bringing a native cooking restaurant to the Madison area?
Well, it's possible for Madison for that last question. I've spent quite a few different events. I've been to quite a few different events over there in Madison. I've worked with the university. I've worked with some groups there. There's some native farms around there, and there's just a lot of work with native food, especially with the Ho-Chunk Nation so close. We've worked with them before in the past, and there's some really good stuff coming out of there, especially with my friend Elena Terry, who's a Ho-Chunk chef from that area. But, you know, there's all sorts of amazing seasonings, you know, because we have obviously salt is a seasoning, but we use a lot of wild herbs. We dehydrate a lot of things. There's a lot of wild mushrooms, a lot of berries. We make our food extremely flavorful. So there's all sorts of stuff. So the more people learn about the plants around them, the more they see food and flavor everywhere. So there's a lot to experiment with. And it's just something different. You know, sometimes we'll call it ironically foreign.
Jim, thanks a lot for that call. I'll plug, we've talked to Elena Terry a couple few times. You can search the WPR.org archives if you want to check out those conversations. We'll go now to Mary with us in Madison. Mary, hi.
Hi. I'm wondering how you compare wild-raised versus farm-raised fowl and fish. To me, there's a difference, for instance, in salmon and the taste and some other things. And how do you compare them nutritionally?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's obviously a lot of comparison when it goes to farm raised and wild. And, you know, if we can find purveyors that have access to wild foods and they're doing it sustainably, then we love to support them. But we do have a lot of friends that do have farm raised stuff. We don't bring in a ton of salmon. We do sometimes when it's in season coming from the Pacific Northwest from some of our indigenous purveyors, or sometimes from Alaska. We were just up in Alaska this summer when the salmon were spawning. But, you know, here in this region, we just just try to buy a lot of stuff very regionally. And we have two big native fisheries nearby us. One is Red Cliff, like I said, up by Madeline Island. And then we also have Red Lake in northern Minnesota that has a huge fishery, and we get a bunch of fresh walleye and stuff. And, you know, there is, you know, different nutritional values, because the wild stuff will have different nutrients and, better fats, because we can't always guarantee what some of the farm-raised products are eating, and so we do our best to really try to find really intentional purveyors that are doing their farms really well.
Mary, thanks a lot for that call. Sean, you've mentioned a couple times you are constantly looking to try new things, researching. You mentioned that basically a cooking lab you've got in the works in Minneapolis. What are you working on next? What things have you excited that you're developing now?
Well, I've been excited just to be able to travel around the nation quite a bit. I think we were in close to 50 cities and 8 countries this year. And it's really exciting to meet a whole bunch of different groups from different nations all over the United States and Canada and Alaska and Mexico. And just to really collaborate with a lot of indigenous peoples working on food sovereignty issues out there. There's just a bright future. So I'm excited about the cookbook that we're working on that'll come out in a couple of years. I'm excited about a lot of the projects with our nonprofit. We're already expanding our nonprofit into cities like Anchorage, Bozeman, and Rapid City, and we'll continue to build that and expand more and more. There's going to be a lot of opportunity to open up more restaurants that we'll just kind of take by ear and see how it goes. And there's even some, video and TV situations on the horizon.
Sean, a lot in the works. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking to Sean Sherman, Oglala Lakota Sioux, a chef and serving indigenous foods at his restaurant Awamini, based in Minneapolis. He specializes in wild food usage and harvesting, food preservation, salt and sugar making, while recognizing native cultures and histories. He's the author of the cookbook, The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen. Well, if you are hungry, so am I, you can find a recipe online at WPR.org/Food Friday. It's a recipe Sean shared with us. It is wild rice pilaf with mushrooms, roasted chestnuts, and dried cranberries. Be a great thing to serve maybe at a holiday gathering if you have one of those coming up. Maybe a little late to hit the grocery store. I don't know. But check it out. Let us know if you make it, and let us know how it went. And hey, we've got a whole new year of Food Fridays to look ahead at in 2023, and we want to hear from you. What do you want to hear us talking about? What is something you'd like to add to your culinary repertoire in your kitchen? Let us know right now. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show, get some help with your self-talk with advice from a psychologist. That's coming up Monday morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret, and I love it when a plan comes together. That's the theme from the 1980s TV show The A-Team. Here's the plan. I'll tell you how the plan came together in just a minute. We want to hear from you about a TV show that you watch or watched that was from before your time, something you watched maybe in reruns or syndication, cable, streaming, that was created, or DVDs, don't forget DVDs, VHSs, that was created before you were born, or at least before you started watching TV, something that might surprise people to know, why do you get that pop culture TV reference? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. This may be a bit out there. I may not have been thinking clearly when I said this would be a good idea for a segment. I'm hoping you're going to join in at 800-642-1234. Okay, here's where this came from. Central Time producer Lauren Cox had sent me a note on Slack with background info on a segment for the show. I replied with a meme of George Peppard as Hannibal in that TV show, The A-Team, saying, "I love it when a plan comes together." His reply included the phrase, "I pity the fool," which Mr. T would say on The A-Team and elsewhere. But wait, Lauren is too young to have watched The A-Team growing up. So that's what got me thinking about these shows that we watch from before our time, surprising pop culture references that we might have. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You got one of these or a bunch of these? How about your kids? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's give a listen to one. Here's a show that I grew up with, right? It was in my head, a new show when I was a kid. Here's a listen.
Some feline character. Could it be Catwoman back again?
Let's take a look. The Cape Crusaders will try to head her off, Bunny.
Just 1 minute, Catwoman.
The nerve of her. Baiting police headquarters.
Yes, Robin. Gotham City may be in for some cataclysmic catastrophes.
Yes, the Batman TV show, part of my childhood. It began and ended before I began or ended. Your turn now at 800-642-1234. That show that you watch or watch from before your own era. Let's go to your calls now. Evan is with us in Bruce. Evan, hi.
Hey, how's it going, Rob? Hope you're staying warm today.
Oh, I will try. Evan, what shows are you do you watch from before your time?
So one I was going to say is The Twilight Zone. That's a pretty classic show. Lots of great episodes. And then the other that I actually watched during the pandemic was the original Star Trek series. And then I ended up watching through kind of all of those shows as we were locked down. Lots of really great old stories out there that are worth revisiting, I'd say.
Yeah, and had you watched later Star Treks first, or was the original series your entry point during COVID?
I remember the 90s shows were on when I was a kid, like Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and those are pretty good. But I had never really watched the original series much until the pandemic hit and we were just kind of stuck. And someone who was really into Star Trek had suggested I go back and watch it. And it's interesting. It's kind of the original Star Trek series is quite similar to the original Twilight Zone series, because it's just about weird things happening to a group of people in each episode. It's just the only difference is that in Star Trek, the characters stay the same versus in the Twilight Zone, where you have a new set of characters in every episode, but pretty similar premises.
Yeah, and both written by some of the big science fiction writers of their time. How did they hold up for you, Evan? Did it seem old and cheesy and kind of ironical to watch it, or did it still hit pretty good for you?
Some of the Star Trek episodes can come off as a little cheesy, especially with how some of the special effects have aged and the color. But I would actually say the Twilight Zone, a lot of Star Trek still holds up, especially with the storytelling. And then the Twilight Zone, I think because it's in black and white, it just has a timeless quality. And it's really easy to watch those. And as long as you're okay watching things in black and white, those still have a lot to say, and they're quite good and entertaining.
Thanks for getting us started, Evan, at 800-642-1234. We are asking you to share your TV show that you watched that's from before your time, before your era. How did you watch it? Oh, I should have asked Evan how he watched Star Trek. Anyhow, join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You weren't the first one, Evan, to mention The Twilight Zone. Phil in Woodstock, Illinois. I'll read his email in a minute. Let's get a taste of The Twilight Zone intro here.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Evan mentioned the Twilight Zone. Phil in Woodstock writes, I was born in 1983, but the Twilight Zone has always been a major part of my life since my family and I would binge the annual New Year's Day marathon on the Sci-Fi Channel when I was a kid. The spooky opening music, Rod Serling's opening narration. Phil says, I've watched every episode at least once. So when the 2016 election results inspired news anchors to say they felt like they were in the Twilight Zone, I understood it as fully, I guess, as my parents, who were toddlers when the series first aired. More than an amazing show, it's a 20th century cultural cornerstone. Yeah, I have memories going my way. I always have to think carefully before I look in the rearview mirror in my car. If you've seen the scene, you know what I'm talking about. If not, check out The Twilight Zone. Okay, we are asking you to share the TV shows that you watch from before your era, maybe before you were born or started watching TV. You can join in at 800-642-1234. This is what we call a caller only. Unfortunately, our call system crashed there for a minute. So if you were trying to get in or briefly on hold with us, please try again. 800-642-1234 is the number to call or recall. 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Ask around Central Time staff. Tim Peterson says, thanks to Nick at Night, I definitely watched some I Dream of Jeannie and Bewitched. Lee Rayburn mentions the Beatles cartoon show from the late 1960s. Yes, that was before my era, too. And I definitely remember I had forgotten about it, Lee. Lee's right over there. Hey, Lee. I had forgotten about it until Lee mentioned it. It was a lot of fun. I want to go back and check that out. And on the Ideas Network Facebook page, we heard from Barney, who says Laramie. Now, that's a Western from the early 1960s. Cindy on Facebook says George and Gracie. That's the legendary George Burns and Gracie Allen. Hey, our phones are working again. Let's go back to your calls. Gage is with us in Madison. Gage, hi.
Hey, what's up? I just want to mention Cheers, coming from Wisconsin. I'm only 30 years old, so that show really resonated with me, even though it was well before my time when it came out.
Yeah. Well, how did you encounter Cheers, and how did you watch it, Gage?
You know what? I don't really know, but I must have found it on some streaming website, and I watched it like 5 years ago. So, man, I binged it all the way through. It was really good seeing Woody Harrelson in his heyday.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about binging Cheers because I was old enough. I was watching it on Thursday nights on NBC when it was on, so you'd get one episode a week. How did it hold up watching one right after another?
Oh man, it was excellent. Yeah, I mean, as soon as that main love interest of Sam's left, it was kind of lackluster. But man, yeah, it held up. I just kept going through episode by episode, waiting to see what happens between Sam and Diane.
Yeah, Gage, thank you so much for sharing that. That's exactly the kind of thing we're looking for at 800-642-1234. Eric is with us now in Fitchburg. Eric, hi.
Hi. As a child of the 70s, I used to watch Hogan's Heroes every afternoon.
Yeah.
That was a hilarious, funny show.
Well, I was in a community with you then, too, because I was watching it at the time. And it was the show actually aired, I'm trying to find it here, in the 60s. Okay, before my time a little bit. In hindsight, it seems like a weird sell. Yeah, it's a comedy set at a prisoner of war camp in World War II Germany. But I don't know. I liked the show at the time. Have you ever gone back and watched it again?
I've seen it once or twice in recent years, but yeah, usually not. But I always remember just the kind of the silly things that they did and the humor behind it. So, yeah,
Eric,
good memories.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that at 800-642-1234. Yeah, the economics of this. So now you got streaming, so you can binge watch there. There were DVDs, there were VHS tapes. For a while, you had these TV stations called UHF stations. They were desperate for stuff to put on these stations. They didn't have a lot of money, so hey, here's an old sitcom. It's got enough episodes, it's on. And that's how people like us watched all those shows. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Archie is with us in Ashland. Archie, hi.
Hi. I used to watch J.P. Patches from down at the city dump back in the 50s.
J.P. Patches, that is not one that I... Okay, I'm looking it up. Were you in the state of Washington by any chance?
I was in Seattle. I would have thought you would remember old JP.
I don't. Now, do you remember Soupy Sales?
Yeah.
Okay, he was Midwest based. He was based in Michigan where I was from. So JP Patches, tell us about it. This was a regional show in Seattle, but it broadcast elsewhere too. What was that?
It was about a clown. Retired clown from the Dingling Brothers Circus. He lived at the city dump, supposedly, and he used to have a lot of characters, particularly for a kid's show. He had more characters than most people. Grandma Patches, Grandpa Patches, Malcontent, the guy that did all the repairs.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing that with us. That is a new old one to me. Thanks for sharing that at 800-642-1234. We've got, this is good. Dave is with us in Milwaukee. Dave, hi.
Good afternoon.
What is your show, Dave?
Perry Mason.
Perry Mason. So Perry Mason's the lawyer, right? When this is something before your time. How did you find Perry Mason? How did you watch Perry Mason?
I just started when I was younger. I mean, it was before my time in the 50s. But there's shows that show these later shows on TV now. my, you know, MeTV, so, and Perry Mason. So I started watching Perry Mason. So
fantastic.
I started watching when I was younger, but one of the first shows I watched as a kid.
That's excellent, Dave. Thanks a lot for sharing. My folks and my uncle and aunt, they get together every now and then. So one of them has the whole Perry Mason DVD collection, and they get together. It is of their era, I will say. Hey, we are taking your calls about TV shows that you have loved from an earlier era, earlier time than yours, something you watched maybe on reruns or cable or streaming, something that might surprise someone to know. Hey, how do you know that pop culture reference? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation. Take more of your calls coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You are our guest. Call in and share a TV show that you connected with that is older than you, a show from an earlier era that you got into or that your kids did maybe at 800-642-1234. I grew up with some Green Acreses and Beverly Hillbillies that were before my time. My kids, we showed them Buffy the Vampire Slayer. They liked it. They found Friends on their own. That was a show from before their time. What are yours? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Back to your calls now. Ed is with us in Northern Illinois. Ed, hi.
Hey, thank you for hosting creepy shows. And if you can find them, post them on your website. I didn't have time to look them up. So Twilight Zone, the one where the kid got stuck in another dimension behind his bed, Edward, and the antlered creep with an arrow going up the stairway creeped me out as a kid, and I can still remember him, obviously.
Ed, but I'll say, I mentioned the looking in the rearview mirror in a car for an episode, and wax museums I'm not a fan of because of the Twilight Zone either.
So if you find those episodes, post them, and then more people can get creeped out still today.
I love it. Ed, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Let's go now to Mike in Green Lake. Mike, hi.
Hi, how are you today? Beautiful show on old TV. I was a child of the 80s, but one of my favorite shows was made by a gentleman named Jerry Anderson from England, and he had marionettes with live action. The show was called The Thunderbirds.
I don't remember that show. Now, is this something you watched? Or was it on like PBS and that's how you found it? Or where did you encounter it?
It was on the UHF stations as
okay,
they were filling in. And I had no idea who this guy was, Jerry Anderson, but the shows, the explosions and the marionettes looked, they were modeled right after actors of the era in the 60s. And if you get to pick the show on YouTube or something like that, it's amazing the quality of the show and the special effects that he had and the explosions. And I guess he did a whole series of shows, the Thunderbirds and Stingray and Joe 90 was a futuristic show. So there was a whole series by Jerry Anderson, and he also produced a show called Space 1999.
Oh, yeah. I remember Space 1999, and I got to say, I looked up Thunderbirds. I didn't remember the show, but looking at the dolls, the marionette things here,
yes,
that looks super familiar to me. That does ring a bell.
Excellent show.
Excellent, Mike. Thanks. Thunderbirds, thanks for sharing that with us. We are taking your whatever your classic TV is, a show that you got into from before you were born. Any era you can name it, whether you're a young person now watching something from when I was young or, you know, earlier than that, you name it. 800-642-1234 is the number to call, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Amanda joins us next in Oshkosh. Amanda, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What shows do you have for us? Oh, thanks.
Oh, gosh. So I grew up basically always watching old TV and still really enjoy it today. I always watched I Dream of Jeannie as a kid. Mm-hmm. Columbo has probably been a favorite of mine since I was 10, and I have 4 seasons on DVD. And my fiance and I bonded over Rockford Files and Twilight.
Ooh.
So being 34, they were all before my time, but the best shows ever.
I just got one more thing to ask you, Amanda. One thing that's bugging me about your story. So, sorry, that was my Columbo impersonation. I don't know if that came through. I'm really bad at impersonations. But I do have a question. Were you like watching this on like broadcast TV or did you like streaming or how did you encounter these shows?
Well, if you remember, TV Land was TV Land was the I Dream of Jeannie. And then there was, like, I think it was a local station, MeTV in Wisconsin, mm-hmm, showed Columbo, but now we stream Rockford and Twilight Zone it's our go-to every night before we head upstairs and tuck in for the night.
I love it. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, that MeTV, that's, I think if people didn't get cable, that was a thing you could get on the broadcast. I remember in the early days of COVID, then producer Bill Martins, when we'd have our, you know, video meetings online, he would always have that on, and they'd always have Magnum PI, and he'd have it on unmuted. So I got to follow what Tom Selleck was up to in the background of our team meetings. Thanks for that call. We're talking about the TV shows that you watched from before your own era. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. Jacob is on the line in Madison. Jacob, what's your show?
Talk about creepy shows. There was one called Lost in Space.
Right. That was one I remember seeing it. It was before my time. When did you encounter it? When did you watch it?
I think it was in the early 60s. I can't remember exactly, but I just remember some of the characters.
Yeah, who do you remember? I remember there are a couple kids. Like, they're all lost in space. There's kind of the cowardly scientist who always kind of made trouble, right?
Yeah, he's kind of creepy.
Uh-huh.
And then there was a rather strange robot.
Oh, that's right. That was well, I know that robot. I grew up being called Robbie, was what people called me. And that was Robbie the robot, I believe, in the role as the Lost in Space robot.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Excellent. Right. That's a great one. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I will go next to Chris with us in Eau Claire. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. What show do you have for us?
So it's SpongeBob SquarePants, and it predates me by almost exactly 3.5 months.
That's awesome. Now, SpongeBob had a long run. It may still be on. I don't know. When did you first get into SpongeBob?
Oh, wow. I think probably 2008. But we didn't normally watch over the air because we don't have cable. So I know back when things weren't as paywalled, we'd watch online. Sometimes if we were at a hotel and they just happened to have a live feed, we'd tune in there. And, you know, sometimes clips show up on YouTube.
Excellent, Chris. Thanks a lot. SpongeBob. Yeah, that's a great one. We are taking shows that you discovered from before your time. Maybe it's something your kids are doing now. How'd you get into it? How do you watch it? What appealed to you about that show from an earlier era? Call it at 800-642-1234. Paul joins us next in Eau Claire. Paul, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your show, Paul?
So, the Andy Griffith Show?
Yeah.
And,
that.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I was going to say, that was still on. I remember watching it as a kid. How did you first encounter it?
Well, I just encountered it. A professor of mine turned me on to it and just said, you got to give it a chance. And he was even part of like one of the conventions and things of that sort. But it is so home. It's just such home, small hometown fun and just great morals. But, you know, just until Barney's gone. Once Barney's gone and goes color, it wasn't as good.
Oh, no. Okay. So the early, before it sold out, I guess, Paul. Thanks a lot.
Right,
for
there it is. It sold out. That's what happened.
Thanks for sharing that
right,
with us, Paul.
A lot.
Time for another call or two. Michael is with us in Madison. Michael, hi.
Hello.
Well, what, you've got a few shows to share with us, Michael.
Oh, yeah. Ed Sullivan, Perry Como, The Milton Berle Show, Superman, Ted Mack, Amateur Hour, the Life of Riley, Lamp Unto My Feet, which was one of the predecessors of most of the syndicated daytime television.
Excellent. Michael, programs. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Some old school shows there for sure. We also heard, I mentioned earlier, I asked around the Central Time team. Emily Burdett remembers watching Frasier and Cheers reruns with her parents. I won't give her age away, but is younger than Cheers and Frasier, I'm pretty sure. And Sarah Hopeful says, I loved Dick Van Dyke as a kid and watched the DVD show on reruns. Sarah says, it inspired me to write a fan letter. I was so into it, and he even sent me back an autographed photo. Fantastic. Thanks to everyone who called in. This has been a lot of fun. You can keep sharing these shows, those shows from an earlier era, shows maybe from before you were born that you got into. Tell us about the show what got you into it and how you watched it. You can do that over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@WPR.org. Coming up on Central Time on Monday, the grammar doctor is in. A grammar expert traveled the country with a roving advice table. She will share some grammar lessons learned along the way. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time.